Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, we're a little less than a week away from the start of the NHL season. I'm excited. I'm also excited that the Americans won the World Juniors, by the way, but we'll get to that later. I'm excited. I'm ready to go. Lots of news, though, going on around the National Hockey League with training camps going in full bore right now.
I was going to ask if we were playing the Star Spangled Banner to start the podcast or to finish the podcast. So I guess you've answered that question, that it'll be at the end. So everybody has that to
look forward to. And I was into it, man.
Yeah.
I watched and I was into it.
So everybody has that to look forward to. But before we get there, hey, we have two fantastic guests. And Brian Boucher.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who is a friend of the show, and I love talking to him. I learn something new every time I speak to him. And then we're going to have Jared Spurgeon, the newly minted captain of the Minnesota Wild, on. What an interesting team they have. Talk to him a little bit about his new job title and his responsibilities, and then some of the exciting prospects they have in camp and, you know, new division and everything else that's going on there. So ton going on. We can summarize some of the huge news that's gone on in the last week. It seems like every day there's five breaking stories, and then we'll get to the guests.
Yeah, you're right. And you're the one at NHL.com that's got to handle all the breaking stories as they come in all the time. So good on you. Glad you're the one doing that. I'll just write a few of them up, but you handle them all. One of the ones, the first one I want to get to, and the reason I want to get to it first is Tuukka Rask, right? And it's not necessarily breaking that Tuukka Rask is the goalie for the Boston Bruins. But I love Tuukka because he's honest and he comes out and he just says it. He's like, no, I'm not playing anywhere else. I'm going to be a Boston Bruin. And whether that's for another year, two, 3 years, doesn't matter. If they wanted to trade me in the offseason, I wouldn't have gone. I'm not going anywhere else. I'm a Boston Bruin. I love the honesty from Tuukka Rask. I think he's primed to have another huge season for the Bruins too.
So you're going to get my rant early this episode. It's not going to wait to the end.
Nice.
Tuukka Rask may be the most underappreciated athlete that's ever played in Boston. I don't understand how this guy is as maligned as he is and how there is such a segment of the Bruins population, fan population, that thinks he's no good and that the Bruins would be better off without him. All this guy does is show up, play, care about his team and his teammates, and win. He hasn't won the cup as a starter. Not his fault that he hasn't won the cup, right? Goalies always get blamed, but it isn't his fault that they didn't win the cup, right? He's not the one that forgot to play defense in the last 2 minutes of the game against the Chicago Blackhawks, right? Yep. He's not the one that blew game six.
Nope. Right? Yep. So, you're not going to hear an disagreement from me, and I'm not interrupting you. I don't want to interrupt you. You're going.
But there's such a segment there in Boston, and look, I'm from that area, and I understand how passionate people are, and you see them, you know, already blaming Cam Newton with the Patriots and everything else that goes on, right? But the Bruins have never had a period of success like they've had right now. And Tuukka Rask is as important to that as anybody else that plays, as important as the newly minted captain and Patrice Bergeron, St. Patrice.
Yeah.
As important as Zdeno Chara, who left to go to the Washington Capitals this week, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Tuukka Rask is as important as any of those players, but for some reason, he's been seen as not as important and excess to needs in a lot of the Boston population, right? So I'm glad that he said he would only play for Boston. This is a guy who bleeds black and gold, right? And always has, and people are always looking to run him out of town. I don't know if I was Tuukka, if I'd be like, I'm always going to play for Boston. I'm sick of these people. I'm going to go someplace else, and I'm going to find the grass is greener there. So good on him, and we have a player who we should all celebrate, and hopefully that happens.
Sean, I love it when you rant. I do. This has to be a weekly thing on the podcast when you rant. But I have a question for you regarding Tuukka Rask. Do you think that Tuukka Rask is a Hall of Fame goaltender?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
Yes, that's the whole idea, right?
Not yet.
Does Tuukka have to win the Stanley Cup as a starter to be one? I mean, he's played in the Stanley Cup final twice.
Yeah.
But he's been there twice.
Yeah, and he was a backup, right?
He's backup to win. He has a ring.
Yeah, so I think he needs to put another couple of years together like he's had. I don't know that a Stanley Cup championship has to be a part of that package, but I don't think he's put together the numbers that he has. I look, in the trophies, the individual trophies, you know, it'd always be nice to add one or two more, right, to burnish your resume and say, here's why I deserve to go in. But right now, to me, he's not, but he's on that next tier. And I think he still has, you know, at least a couple of years to get himself better. The other thing I wonder about Tuukka is how long he's going to play, right? That next contract is going to be interesting because he's always kind of flirted with, I don't really need this, right? I can go home. I can do stuff, you know, other stuff. I don't know how long he's going to play. I don't know that he's a Zdeno Chara in that, you know, he's going to want to play, you know, into his 40s, a Marty Brodeur, that type of player. I don't know if he has that. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do in the next couple of years and revisit this argument.
Yeah, I agree with you. We'll see. By the way, Chara wearing a Capitals jersey in Capitals practice looks strange to me. We're going to have to get used to that. Just pointing that out. It still looks very weird. But other news.
Well, don't we have to talk about that, right?
Well, we could. I mean, but I think we know what his role is going to be. We know what he's going to do. We know the leadership that he's going to bring there. I don't think there's going to be any surprises except the way he looks. It just looks different.
Yeah, no, it does. And I guess the surprise is in the leaving, right? I mean, he was a Boston institution and now he's gone and pretty much gone because he wasn't guaranteed a role. I thought the most interesting thing was he said that the Bruins wouldn't guarantee him a role, that he would be in that 6-7 mix. And then in the next breath, he said, the Capitals haven't guaranteed me anything either, but I signed here. So it makes me wonder, you know, what else was at play there and kind of how it all went down. Everybody was so nice at the end of it, right? There was no acrimony. There was no nothing, but you know, he pretty much signed someplace else for the bare minimum for no promise of anything more than what he would have got in Boston.
Yeah. And that's fine. Good on the Bruins though. I think it's the right thing to do. You eventually have to cut the cord. You do.
Yeah, you got to rip the Band-Aid.
Yeah. You got to rip the Band-Aid. It's never easy to do. They did it. Like you said, it was with class, so that's all good. And Chara understands that, and he went out with class too. And I hope he has a great season with Washington, but I think it was the right thing for the Boston Bruins to do. I'm turning their attention now to Patrice Bergeron being the new captain, which he was named today, Thursday. By the way, before we continue, we will have Jared Spurgeon, the captain of the Minnesota Wild, and Brian Boucher from NBC joining us as guests shortly. It was an interesting week, Sean, for the Columbus Blue Jackets. One, Pierre-Luc Dubois signs, but there's some ramification there. 2-year contract, $10 million. And does he really want to be there? Does he not want to be there? We'll see. And then Oliver Bjorkstrand, who I really like as a player, and I think he could be a 30-goal scorer in the league, should be a 30-goal scorer in an 82-game season, he signs a 5-year deal. So he buys in all the way. Pierre-Luc Dubois, a 2-year deal. What do you make of what happened in Columbus this week?
Well, look, I thought it was interesting. I think that is an organization, maybe more than any other, by the way they're run, that can deal with something like a Pierre-Luc Dubois kind of hinting at that he doesn't want to be there, right? I mean, they've gone through it with Bobrovsky and all the other players that they brought in there and that have left, Panera and all those guys. And, you know, you kind of see it as a kind of somewhat of a similar situation. But I think while he's there, that room makes it work, right? Whether it's Tortorella being brutally honest and bringing it up in front of the team and saying, this is where we're at and this is how we're going to deal with it. And I don't care what anybody thinks. This is how we're going to deal with it. And this is what I expect from you. And this is what your teammates expect, right? And it was a week of truculent press conferences, right? Like Pierre-Luc Dubois didn't want to talk about, you know, wanting to leave, but wouldn't say he wanted to stay. And then, you know, a day or two later, here comes Patrick Laine. And, you know, the same thing. There's been trade rumors following him, you know, demands to be traded from his agent that have been reported, you know, and there's Patrick Laine standing at the podium and basically saying, well, I'm here, aren't I? Like never answering,
here, right?
Never answering the question, right? Ask directly. Did your agent ask? Well, I'm here. Trades happen all the time. Wayne Gretzky got traded. That's all well and good, Patrick, but you didn't answer the question, right? Yeah. So I think both those are really interesting cases because the GMs are in a tough spot and a really hard financial landscape. And that limits what they can do with their assets. So I'm curious how they'll play out, but I don't think it'll impact Columbus much at all. I wonder a little bit more about Winnipeg just because of what a talent that Patrick Laine is and you know, where that can go and the scrutiny. Look, the scrutiny is completely different in Winnipeg than it is in Columbus. So I'm a little more concerned with how volatile that situation can be for them.
Yeah, and not to mention, it will be all Canadian media covering the Jets wherever they go, too. So let's point that out this season, where, I mean, whether it's virtual or in person, whatever it may be, they're only going to be traveling in Canada, so it's only going to be Canadian media, and I don't think Patrick Laine is going to be able to escape it, whereas Pierre-Luc Dubois, you know, has dealt with it and probably will escape it, I think, for the rest of the season. But it does ask another question, a different situation, although similar. Matthew Barzal with the New York Islanders still not in training camp yet. And I mean, for all we know, a deal could be getting signed right now. We don't know. I mean, it's just the way the nature is because of the Lou Lamoriello. You're not finding anything out, but they're a week away from playing a game and Barzal's not skating with them right now. I think at this point, if you're an Islander fan, now you're reaching the cause for concern.
I think you're past that cause, right? And I think Barry Trotz coming out yesterday and never mentioning Barzal by name, but saying, you know, guys have to be here. They need to be skating with their team. There's two things. There's no exhibition games, right? So there's no tuning up, so to speak. And then you walk into the season and there's no let up, right? So if a guy comes in and he's out of game shape, there's no question that Matt's been skating and you know, before camp opened, I'm sure was skating with other Islanders. There's no question about his dedication to fitness, but anybody will tell you that playing in a game is different than skating in the rink and doing laps and bag skating and all those other things that happen to get yourself in shape and get your hockey legs back. Playing in a game is a completely different experience, and they're going to come fast. They're going to come furious. And look, I'm sure Barry and Lou and everybody else is also worried about injuries, right? Yeah. A guy that's not ready to play comes in the first day of the season and says, okay, I'm ready to sign, put me in the lineup. That's a little bit of a tricky situation to do. When do you find him rest? You know, when do you make sure he's okay? So, you know, I think this might be the most difficult year to be a restricted free agent and try and negotiate what you think you're worth, because it's just not there.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, Sean, the landscape doesn't allow for that contract, that big blowout contract. Like Mitch Marner signs, you know, 6 years, $65 million, almost $11 million a year. That's just not available right now to Matthew Barzal with the financial landscape that we have right now in the National Hockey League. So it will be interesting to see where that goes. There's a lot of news, and we hit on a lot of news also with Brian Boucher, our first guest from NBC Between the Glass. Brian Boucher, the former NHL goaltender, joined us. Here's that interview with Bush. Bush, thanks so much for hopping on with us. Really appreciate it. First thing, man, let's get your thoughts on 56-game season, complete realignment. I mean, what are you looking forward to right now as you look ahead to the NHL season?
Well, I think we're eliminating a portion of the season where maybe, you know, you can kind of tune out if you want to, I guess, if you will. I understand the purpose of 82 games, the economics of the game. It all makes sense for owners. It makes sense for players. But there's, you know, as a player and as a former player, there's a portion of the season there that it's tough. It's a grind. And I think when you get to about, you know, 50 games under, maybe 40 games under, it becomes a sprint, and the games mean a lot more. And I think we're going to get to that portion of the season right away. And to me, that's exciting. Another thing that's exciting to me is the fact that, teams will stay in their division. There will be rivalries. There will be hatred. There will be tempers boiling. And to me, I think that's a good thing. I know that, you know, we don't want to sell violence or anything like that. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, when you play an opponent eight different times, you know, there's going to be some things that spill over, and maybe things that are said inside a game that might, you know, draw the attention of the opponent. So I'm looking forward to that. And there might be some new rivalries that are created from these new divisions. There'll be some old rivalries that are restoked. And to me, I think that creates for a lot of intrigue here heading into a short season.
And to me, one of the biggest storylines is going to be the goaltenders, right? I mean, this season is something that nobody's ever experienced the way it's going to be experienced with teams playing each other back to back, and maybe even more condensed than it's ever been. And that's going to weigh most heavily on the goalies. What do you see as far as, you know, coaches and having to juggle that, right? Like Connor Hellebuck came out the other day and said, I want to play all the time. Mm-hmm. We're going to win the cup. You know, the best chance for us to win the cup is for me to play. Right. Mm-hmm. And goalies are egotistical that way. Right. And, but these are huge headaches for coaches. because they have to juggle fatigue. They have to juggle all of those things. How do you see a lot of these playing out? Like where it's maybe a one and a 1A or something like that.
Yeah, really, Sean, there's only two guys that stand out to me in the NHL that I think are guys that you would ride all the way. And it's Vasilevsky and Hellebuck. Those are the two guys to me that when I just think, you know, generally, those are the two guys that I think of that have to play 85% of their team's games, maybe 80%. Then I think after that, you start to get to a situation where it's about a tandem situation for a lot of organizations. And even Montreal is going in that direction, right? Recognizing that Carey Price, maybe getting a little longer in the tooth, is probably going to need a little bit of help. So they pick up a veteran in Jake Allen, which should help them win some hockey games. You know, the fatigue part is interesting because with the way the schedule is going to be set up, it's going to be set up like series, kind of like baseball, two game sets where there is no travel. So I think in a lot of ways that's beneficial for goaltenders where you're not having to hop on a plane after a game and maybe you can kind of get your rest, kind of similar to what we saw in the bubble. You know, the back-to-backs there to me didn't seem to be so much of an issue because, you know, you can go back to your hotel room, you go back, get a meal, get your rest and recover in a proper fashion. I think that's important for goalies, but seeing that it's such a short season and you need to have your absolute best every single game, I think it's in most teams' best interest to have two guys that can win them hockey games. And we don't know what the effects of the COVID protocols are going to be. If somebody comes down with COVID in a team and there's contact tracing, you're going to have other options in goal. And I don't know that you can necessarily just rely on one guy because it's not just about injury. It might even be about illness now this season, which is something that we haven't had to deal with really ever in the NHL.
Bush, I want to stick with that theme, the goaltending theme, because I think I look out to the West Division now. You've got three teams there that I wonder about their goaltending. And I wanted to ask you, who's the more questionable for you? Colorado is number one. I love the team, but you haven't, you know, Grubauer's been hurt a bunch. You know, Francouz got hurt, and neither one of them have, shall we say, done it, you know. But then two teams that will absolutely be fighting for a playoff spot in that division, and I don't think both of them are going to make it because you got Colorado, Vegas, and St. Louis in that division. Minnesota with Talbot now and Stalock and maybe Kaapo Kakkonen, we'll see. And San Jose with Dubnyk and Jones. Of those two, and then you can give me your thoughts on the Avalanche too, but of the Minnesota Wild and the San Jose Sharks, who do you trust more in terms of the goaltending?
Oh, I would have to go with San Jose's tandem, and I think they're both going to benefit from a little bit less workload. I think for Dubnyk, he needs to play. I know he's been a workhorse, but I think he's at the point in his career where he needs to share the net, and he needs to be fresh so that he can give quality starts. And I feel like Martin Jones, too. I think he just he needs another guy that can help him out. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I need a little help. Yeah. Although, you know, you know, goalies don't like to readily admit that, but there's times where you just like, you know, you look at, you know, the schedule and it's like, man, there's so many games and there's so, you know, the parity's there and we got to be sharp every night. There's very little error, margin for error. So you need the help. And I think those two guys are going to benefit one another. Do I think they're a playoff team? I don't know. I agree with you. I think the top three teams in that division, that's all we should be talking about, really. The fourth team that makes it, I don't think is going to have much consequence when it comes to playoffs. But, yeah, I think San Jose's is more important. Those guys will make a bigger difference, Dubnyk and Jones. And then as far as Colorado's concerned, you're right. I mean, that team is loaded.
Yeah.
In every single way imaginable on offense and on the back end, but their question mark is in goal. And I know Grubauer, you know, played a role in winning a Stanley Cup, but you know, a couple of years now have passed and the question marks I think are valid. And until he can prove it, I think that's always going to be a question mark, whether they address it at some point this year, who knows what the trade landscape will look like. I have no idea how it's going to play out, but that will always be the one question mark this season going forward for Colorado, because they've got everything else. I mean, a stud elite defense, the best player in the game in Nathan MacKinnon. They're a fun team to watch, but we'll see if they can keep it out of their net at the end of the day.
MacKinnon came out the other day and said that Colorado should win the cup, that they're the prohibitive favorites, and good for him in saying that. Do you believe that with the goaltending that they have?
It's all encompassing, right? You can't just, say without the, I mean, the goaltenders are a big part of it. I don't know that they are the absolute favorite. Do I think they're one of the favorites? Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you can just push aside Tampa Bay with what they've done, even without Kucherov in the regular season. I think that's going to work in their favor in the end. It's going to allow Stamkos to get plugged back into the lineup, creates no issues. There's some hungry guys there. And, you know, the way Tyler Johnson was handled in the offseason, I would think that this guy's going to have a chip on his shoulder and has a lot to prove. And they'll settle their whole lineup when it gets to playoff time. And so I don't know how you can just push aside Tampa Bay and what they've done. But Colorado, when you look at everything except the goaltending, it's hard not to believe that they would be a favorite. So I like McKinnon coming out, having the guts to say that. He has every right to say it because he's a wonderful player, a great player, and I expect him to be fantastic again this year.
Let's stay out west because there's two other teams there that we all think are going to make the playoffs, St. Louis and Vegas. And I want to get your take on both from this perspective. From St. Louis, Pietrangelo, the leader of that team, the captain of that team that was the leader on that Stanley Cup team, he's now in Vegas. How big of a hole is that? Yes, they got Terry Krug, but how big of a leadership void is that for the Blues, and how do they fill it? And from Vegas's perspective, that team was the Misfits, right? I mean, we loved that team. It's like a different team now. They're not the Misfits anymore. And now a locker room leader, the guy that everybody loved, Nate Schmidt, he's in Vancouver because he was replaced by Pietrangelo. What's your take on both of those teams and how maybe that will play out with these changes?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a loss in St. Louis from a leadership standpoint with Pietrangelo being gone. I think, you know, it's hard not to recognize that. He was drafted by them, won a cup with them, was such a mainstay, tremendous defenseman for them. And I don't think anybody's going to sit here and say that Torrey Krug is anything close to what Pietrangelo is defensively, right? So there's a bit of a trade-off there. You're giving up some leadership. And I think Torrey Krug, from the dealings I've had with him, he's a quality person too. He's a guy that's a competitor. He's had to earn every inch that he's gotten in his career. So I think he's gonna bring some of that in that room as well, and he's going to help on the power play. He's tremendous on the power play. So maybe it's a little bit of a different looking power play with him up top. That might improve. I don't know if it's better defensively. I would say it probably is not. But as far as leadership is concerned, other guys are going to step up in that room. They got some veteran guys like Ryan O'Reilly, Braden Schenn, Schwartz, these are quality people. So I don't think that they're in trouble in the leadership department, but they are going to miss Pietrangelo. That was their captain. And on the flip side of it, he goes to Vegas. I think this is the one thing about Vegas that is interesting to me is that, they were the Misfits, but last year there was just, that whole situation with Marc-Andre Fleury and, his agent, getting involved, Alan Walsh and all that. And that's an odd situation. You know what I mean? Like, that's hard. I don't know how you ignore something like that. Like, and Fleury, he's a great guy, a great teammate. And that seems so out of character that something out of his camp would treat a situation like that. But, is there something there? Only the people inside those walls would really know. And it's up for, Marc-Andre Fleury to make sure that, what happened there doesn't rear its ugly head again this year. Because when you really look at that tandem of him and Robin Leonard, you could argue that's the best tandem in the NHL. And I think Pietrangelo, although Nate Schmidt was a great locker room guy, I think Pietrangelo is an upgrade on defense for that hockey club. And I think, a guy like, some younger, infusion of youth and guys like Cody Glass coming in and Stastny going out, they're getting younger and they should be better. And I think the expectations are there. They've got guys that can score. I know they struggled to score at times last year, but I look at their lineup and I say there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to score. This is a team that is going to make for an interesting division in the West.
And let's switch east for a minute and talk about a team that you know a lot about. You spend a lot of time around. The Flyers early in camp have said, hey, we have an advantage Nothing's changed for us. We're not bringing anybody in. We know what our lines are. We know who our goalies are. We know AV system because we've had a year in it. We're three steps ahead of everybody else. And you know, we made it pretty deep last year. So, you know, we think we're going to be a good team this year. Do you subscribe to that?
I do. But, you know, in saying that, you got to be careful not to get too complacent, right? Just because you've had a little bit of success. I mean, it is a very difficult league and it's very competitive. So you can't just say, hey, just because AV was here last year, we know the systems and everybody's returning, that all is going to be fine. There were some, you know, concerning things to me in the playoffs last year. You know, a guy like Konechny struggled mightily in the playoffs for them. Their power play was abysmal in the playoffs. These are concerning things that need to be figured out. You know, Konechny needs to return to, you know, 25 goal pace, if not more. Can they get more out of James Van Riemsdyk? What's his role? Oscar Lindblom, is he going to be the player that we thought he was going to be before he got sick? And although it was a great story last year with him coming back, it'd be great if he could return to form. And if he does, that's a real positive for their team. Nolan Patrick, you know, what is Nolan Patrick? Is he going to be healthy? Is he going to be part of their, you know, three centermen on this team this year? So, and the loss of Matt Niskanen, I think you can't forget about that. This is a guy that quietly went about his business. I think he really helped out Ivan Provorov on the back end. And they're going to miss his leadership, no doubt about that. So, I mean, for them to just say, yeah, we, you know, we feel very comfortable, that's great. But when the puck drops, if you, you know, lose 4 out of 5 or anything like that, you know, I think then you start to tighten up a little bit and we'll see if they really are who we think they are. But there's no doubt that they made tremendous strides last year. They win a playoff round. Carter Hart's the real deal. Brian Elliott's the right guy to be his number two and help him out. And Provorov really seemed to get back on track last year, and they got a good young pipeline of prospects. So I think there's a reason for optimism in Philly, but I just would be cautious to say that it's automatic because nothing is automatic in this league.
You know, it's just funny to me that you went through all of the potential pitfalls for the Flyers and you don't have to mention goaltending. Like it comes all the way down to the end of the answers. Oh, by the way, their goaltending is fantastic. You know, like you're talking about the Philadelphia Flyers. It's so different. I just found that funny. I wanted to, let's stick in Pennsylvania, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Are they still a legitimate Stanley Cup contender in your mind?
Yeah, they are. And the reason why is because they've got Crosby, they've got Malkin, and they've got Letang. And as long as you've got that, then I got belief that they can be a team that can win. So, you know, Mike Sullivan is still there. I know they made some changes to their coaching staff, but you know, they're still intact. And I know Matt Murray's gone, and there might be some question marks in goal. I am a believer in Tristan Jarry, and I may be in the minority. I don't know. I haven't, you know, asked people, but from what I see in him and what he's done in his career at the junior level and at the minors, it tells me that he's going to be a good number one goaltender. Is he going to be a top five guy in the NHL? No, but I think he's going to be good enough that you can win with him. He's a great puck handler. And I think that's a big help to the defense on the back end. And, you know, Jake Gensel's a fantastic player. So, yeah, I still think they've got it. I'm not saying that it's going to be for the next, you know, 5 to 7 years, but I would put Washington in this category as well. I think that there's a year or two where it can be done. And as long as you got those stars healthy and motivated, it's hard to you know, to bet against them.
You know, you talked about Jarry, and that kind of leads into a conversation back to the goaltending a little bit. And then you spoke about Washington, right? They're going to try and do it with Sorokin. I mean, the Islanders are going to try and introduce Sorokin. The Capitals are going to do Samsonov. There's a lot of young goalies, untested goalies. Even New York with Shesterkin, it's a really small sample size. You know, in a condensed season with a lot on the line for some of these teams, particularly the Capitals, is that really a difficult tightrope to walk to bring in a guy like that who hasn't had a ton of number one reps to do it this year of all years?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, you can make the argument that in a shorter season, maybe it's less daunting as well, though. I mean, like if you get hot and you start riding this wave, it might be easier to ride it for a 56 game season as opposed to 82. But if you're a head coach and, you know, if you're Peter Laviolette and you don't have a long track record with Ilya Samsonov, you know, I'm sure he's a little bit, you know, nervous deep down inside wondering, you know, is this guy really ready? I mean, I'm sure he looks at him in practice and says, you know, I see the talent. I see, you know, the reason why he was a first round pick. But all that doesn't matter, you know, when it comes to the National Hockey League. You got to get in there and win hockey games. So their best plans didn't come to fruition. Lundqvist, you know, obviously he's not going to be there to help out Samsonov. And, you know, Craig Anderson, I believe, is on a PTO there. And that could be, you know, an interesting, you know, find for them. And I think Craig Anderson's still got some hockey in him. He's a competitor. He's played some good hockey in spurts throughout his career. So, how much will he be used there? Does he sign a contract? We shall see. But with the young guy Sorokin coming in, seems to be a little bit older. And if, you know, history tells us anything in short history with, you know, Shesterkin, these guys that are a little bit older coming over from Russia, it's not like they're kids. You know, these guys, they played pro hockey. They have their way about them. They know what they're doing when it comes to winning hockey games. And I know it's a short, you know, a short sample size with Shesterkin, but it's hard not to get excited if you're a Ranger fan of what he could be, him and Georgiev. And I guess if you're an Islander fan, you're excited maybe that could be the same path that Sorokin takes.
Well, Ranger fans are also excited about the kid, Lafreniere, you know, who comes in, Alexei Lafreniere. And I mean, Bush, normal times, this guy would get drafted. He'd go to development camp. He would come back, train. He'd go to a prospects tournament in Traverse City where the Rangers go annually. He'd come back from that, go right into training camp, play about 5 or 6 exhibition games, and then play an NHL regular season game. Not this time. I wonder, you know, he doesn't have any of that, and it's a shortened training camp. How does that impact a 19-year-old who's never played in the league but has the obvious skill and the obvious potential to be great in this league?
Yeah, I'm sure he's anxious, right? I mean, every kid that, you know, thinks about the draft, they can't wait to fast forward and get to that moment, get drafted, and then fast forward, get to the next milestone. So that, I'm sure that's a little bit nerve-wracking for him. But I will say this, you know, oftentimes if you, you know, say you play late into your junior season, you go to the Memorial Cup in May, and then the combine and then the draft, and you talked about development camps, and then, you know, maybe a World Junior camp that you got to go to in the summer, and it's fast and everything. You know, I don't know that the training is really where you'd like it to be or where it needs to be. So maybe the one positive coming out of this is that Lafreniere now had time to really get strong, right? To really work in the weight room, maybe put some muscle on that maybe would not have been put on had camp been in September like normal. And where we see a lot of these kids coming in and they're not quite strong enough. I mean, we're hearing, you know, out of the New Jersey camp and Jack Hughes. I mean, he's had a long time to hit the weight room and get stronger. And I think that's going to benefit him this year. And he's had time to reflect on his rookie season. So maybe for Lafreniere, slowing it down a little bit, although you want to get there and you want to rush and everybody wants it yesterday, it may end up in the end being a really good thing for him. And I think, you know, I think the Rangers, you know, they've got some other young guys. I don't think the expectations are for them to be great right off the hop, right? I still think that there's room for growth. And I think that's a good situation for Lafreniere coming in where he's going to catch a team on the upswing and could be a real positive thing for him.
Ryan, we've taken up a ton of your time. I'm going to ask you one quick one and then we can let you go. What are you most looking forward to this year?
Rivalries. That to me is what stands out. You know, like I think about, you know, I think about the old Patrick division, right? I mean, that division to me, like that East division is like, man, you're talking Flyers versus Rangers, Rangers versus Islanders, Flyers, Penguins, you know, the Bruins are in there. I know it's not the Adams division, right? Because we don't have the Canadians in there for the Bruins, but, you know, Buffalo's in there. So I know some of the rivalries are not ones that are traditional. Like when I look out West, I mean, you know, or in Central, I mean, you know, Nashville, Detroit, I guess you could say that is an old rivalry. Columbus and Carolina is not a rivalry. So maybe there'll be some new rivalries started, but there's some old ones, you know, and then you go out in the Canadian division, in the North division, you got the Battle of Alberta. I mean, how can you not get excited about that? Toronto, Montreal, 8 times. So to me, I know people love the way it was or the way it has been. This is going to go back to the way it was maybe a long, long time ago, which is, I think, nostalgic for a lot of us, and hope that it plays into the hands of what rivalries used to be. Maybe it won't. I hope it will. But it's something fresh. It's something new. It's something to keep our interest there. And, you know, I think, you know, limiting the travel will only help as far as like recovery and quality of play. I just hope that everybody can stay safe, stay healthy, and we get a majority of the guys that we expect to be in the lineup to be in the lineup, because I think that's going to be what's best for the NHL product. And it's going to be a quick sprint, and then before you know it, we'll be in the playoffs, and hopefully there will be better days ahead during springtime, and you know, maybe there will be fans, and you know, and I think we'll, you know, be on the backside of what we've had to deal with here in the past year, and we can look forward to who's going to win the Stanley Cup in July.
Bush, great stuff, man, and we all echo those thoughts. Can't wait to see you on TV doing your thing, and really appreciate you giving us some time here.
All right, guys, great to be with you.
Great to catch up with Brian Boucher. And Sean, I think we can both agree that with him on this one, that the rivalries are something to really look forward to this season. Also, something to look forward to right now. Well, I mean, we just had it, and I mentioned it at the top. The World Juniors, obviously, as a proud American, I'm happy that the U.S. won. I thought Trevor Zegras in that tournament was unreal, and he was the player of the tournament. And now it's a question to me, and then there's some other guys to talk about as well that played in that tournament and how they factor into the NHL this season. And I answered a question, Sean, in the mailbag about Trevor Zegras and where he factors in with the Ducks. And I think this is where the taxi squad can really benefit a player like Trevor Zegras. Put him on that for a week or a week and a half. Get him used to some NHL practices and pace before you put him into a game.
Yeah, I look, Dan, I think it's going to be really interesting. The other thing that plays into this is where are these players going to go, right? When they're done now and they're going to report to NHL camps and you know, maybe see a little bit of time. I believe that the window has shrunk to 7 games because of the truncated schedule. It's not 10 anymore. Before that slide happens, if you go past 7 games, you can't slide the contract, you know, and that's going to be the magical number for a lot of these guys. But when you're done and you want it, you've seen enough of them and you want to send them back, where are you going to send them to? Right. We don't know what the Canadian junior leagues are going to look like. They've all been pushed back. You know, the AHL came out the other day and said they would play in February. And I believe that players that would normally not be allowed to play in the AHL will this year because of the Canadian junior leagues and the uncertainty there. But a lot of these players aren't going to have other options. So maybe they stay and the contracts get eaten, but there's so many guys that played in this tournament. And this is why for years, Dan, I've been telling you,
here we go.
You need to watch this tournament and you need to watch it from the beginning, because there's so many players that, you know, I think could have an impact when you look at what happened. Right. And you talked about Zegras and of course he's one of them. Right. I think Tim Stutzel showed that he's ready to play in the NHL. Him and Paterka, who's a Buffalo prospect, carried that team, right? They scored almost all their goals.
Yeah, he played almost every minute.
Yeah, he showed all the leadership that you would want out of a player. He played 30 minutes a game when they were carrying 14 players because of COVID issues. If I'm Ralph Kruger, and we had him on a couple of weeks ago, and he talked a little bit about it, but I'm sorry, that's for Paterka. But if I'm the Ottawa Senators, I'm just over the moon that this kid's being added to my mix, right, with all the young players they already have. So, you know, and you know, we're going to talk to the Minnesota Wild new captain. They may be adding Marco Rossi, right, who I thought played very well on a not very good Austria team. And I don't know that it was a true showcase of who he is, but I did like the way he played through the tournament, just dealing with all the adversity they had. So I think if you watch this tournament, and I think more people watch it because everybody's hungry for hockey and our season hasn't started yet, that a lot of the names that were mentioned, you know, especially in the medal round, you're going to be like, hey, I saw that kid play a couple of weeks ago. He was pretty good. And now he's going to be pretty good in the NHL, because the other advantage they have is they've played 2 weeks of really high level hockey and they're fresh and they're in game shape. You know, we just talked about Matt Marcel not being in game shape. These kids are young and they're in game shape and they're going to walk into camp and they're going to be equal, if not ahead of some of the veteran guys.
That was close to your second rant of the podcast, by the way.
I got more coming. Because I didn't even get to talk about the fact that the Americans beat the greatest team in the history of world
ever
junior
assembled.
Hockey. Look, I love TSN. They do a great job, right? And all the games are on NHL Network. The U.S. games, Dave Starman does them. And you know, they do their own production for that. But the other three games, and thank God they were all on every day. But they're all TSN coverage, right? And this Canada team, which was a great team, they had never given up a 5-on-5 goal in the whole tournament. They had outscored their opponents like 44-3, you know, and they were putting them up there with what were greatest teams in the history of the World Juniors were, right? And this is such a point of emphasis for Canada. They love their World Junior teams because it happens over the holidays and it's something they can invest in and they're always good at it. But this team was being talked about as being one of the best World Junior teams in the history of Canadian hockey. So I guess the American team's better than all of them.
Well, they were on one night. There's no question about it. But let's go back to my original point, because that's the point I wanted to make, right? That the taxi squad benefits teams with, I mean, like you touched on it, right, Sean? Like, where are they going to go if they're not ready after seven games, right? Where do they go? Well, take your time with them. See what you have, right? So a Zegras shows up in Anaheim. He's got to probably have to quarantine, number one, right? So he's not going to get on the ice in training camp, most likely. If he does, it'll be a one or two times. You're going to throw him straight into an NHL game? No, you're not going to do that. Put him on the taxi squad. He practices with the team. He travels with the team. And I think we could say the same thing here if you want Rossi or Quinton Byfield or Alex Turcotte or Cole Caulfield, whatever it may be, right? Although some of the, like Caulfield might be going back to play college hockey, but put him on the taxi squad. Let him practice with the team a little bit. Let him get up to pace with the team. I was talking to Alexis Lafreniere this week with the Rangers. He said the one difference that he's really noticed is the pace of play and practice is so much faster than it is from what he's used to. So as they were playing high-level games at the World Juniors, they were not playing NHL games. So get him used to the pace, then throw him into a game. Give him two or three. See how he does. If he still needs some time, put him back on the taxi squad. You literally can take a month plus here with a player before you determine. And if you're the Ducks, if you're the Kings, if you're the Senators, you're not in a rush, right? I mean, this is not a season where you're looking to say, we're going to win the Stanley Cup this year. You're not in a rush. It makes a lot of sense in my mind.
You can go almost 2 months. You play them once a week, and that buys you 7 weeks, right? So you have a lot of time with these guys. And I think, you know, moving on from that, I think one of the most amazing things, especially if you love numbers and you love finance and machinations, the taxi squad is going to be nirvana for those people who love the nitty gritty. Look, I went into writing because math is a bit of a disaster for me, especially higher level math. But, you know, there's already been tons of stories written about how salary cap teams are going to be able to use the taxi squad to maximize what they do, you know, send guys down between games because there's no travel to the AHL teams or nothing. They're all going to be paper transactions and you're going to be able to build your salary cap nest egg to get closer to the trade deadline. You know, but like Bush said, who knows what that trade deadline, that trade market's going to look like, right? Between teams having to have players quarantined. So, you know, you're going to have to make trades way before the deadline and just financially what that situation is going to be. But the taxi squad, which is new, it could be one of the most intriguing storylines of the season.
No question about it. One guy we know won't be going to the taxi squad, at least we don't think he will, is the new captain of the Minnesota Wild, defenseman Jared Spurgeon. We were able to catch up with Jared, talked a lot about his new role here with the Minnesota Wild. So here's that interview with Jared Spurgeon. Jared, thanks so much for hopping on with us. Congratulations, the new captain of the Minnesota Wild. Thoughts on being named captain of the Wild? Were you surprised? Did you half expect it, half not? What do you think?
I was surprised. At the same time, I was knew there's a possibility of it happening, but with a room with a lot of great leaders, yeah, I knew there was options. But it was definitely a fun night for my family when Bill and Dean came over to honor me with the jersey and included the kids and my wife to be around at the same time. So is a pretty special night for the family, but I'm just looking forward to getting the season going with the guys and finally playing a game again.
That sounds like a great night, and it must have been awesome for your family. I'm curious, like a lot of people look at the captain of any team, you know, and they're like, oh, he wears the C, and you know, it's such a honorific, but I don't know that a lot of people know what a day-to-day life of a captain is like. What do you think your main responsibilities are, and how are you going to execute them?
Well, I think as a captain, you just have to have a feel on the room, and whether it's certain guys needing a little talking to, or just like I said, feeling out the room and what certain guys need or what the team needs in general. And I think game days, obviously you want to be a calming presence and speak your two cents when you have to, but at the same time you just have to be there for the guys and lead by example and do your best to do that, but include everyone as well to make them feel comfortable and like they have a say in it.
You learned the captaincy by watching Mikko Koivu for so many years. Do you feel as though now that you have the role, you will be an extension of that, or do you have your own wrinkles that you want to throw into what the C means?
I think everyone who leads in a different way. And if you go out of your way and pretend like you're someone you're not, I think the guys won't trust you and aren't going to follow your lead. So I don't think I'm going to change the way I go about my day and the rink and everything like that. But at the same time, I had great people around me to learn from coming up with. Like you said, Mikko was a great captain, but we had Andrew Brunette my first couple of years and Nick Schultz. I had Matt Cullen as well. And just a lot of great veteran players that took me in when I was younger in the league and taught me the ropes. And I'm looking forward to using those things that they taught me and bringing them into the team now.
So what you're telling me is there's not a stack of leadership how-to manuals on your night table.
I don't think so. I think everyone does it their own way. And obviously there's more rah-rah guys out there, and then there's the quiet leaders. And there's guys that lead by example, and there's just all different types, but it's whatever works for you. But like I said, I feel if you go out of your way and you're not being yourself, people will see right through that.
And Jared, you married yourself to the Wild here when you signed that big contract last year. Well, no, on September 14th, 2019 now. So what do you like most about this franchise that you're with and the city that you're in? Like, what is it about Minnesota and the Wild that are a good marriage for you?
Well, obviously, starting here was a huge point for myself with them giving me a chance. But from Craig on down, there's just great people here, and they all want to win. And with Bill coming in here last year and the way he spoke about his plan that he had for the team and the vision he had, it was nice to hear and refreshing to hear. And I believe we have a lot of good pieces in place right now with the guys that we still have around, and also we have a lot of great young prospects coming up, and it's an exciting time. And obviously any year in the league is going to be a tough year, but we're going to have to work this year, and we have a lot of new faces. But like I said, from the ownership down, it's just a great place to play, and we all want to win here, and we want to bring that first cup back to Minnesota.
You know, you spoke about this year and how different it's going to be. What are your first thoughts when you look at, you know, your schedule and the division you're playing in, and you know, how that's all going to play out, and maybe some of the new rivalries that are going to develop? And, you know, there's a lot of top teams in your division, which make things a little more difficult.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because you're playing all the teams that you're fighting for a playoff spot with. So every game is going to mean that much more. And I think you just sort of have to treat it as a mini playoff series, every little two or three game span that you have against those teams. But it's going to bring out the best in every team when, like you said, there's every team in there is a high talent team, hardworking team. And schedule wise, I feel like it seems like it's pretty much similar to the second half of the year, what it usually is. But looking at the schedule, we don't have too many crazy long road trips where we're on the road for longer than eight 8 days, where that's pretty normal for us. So just the road trips are going to be a bit different when you're locked in your hotel room.
You know, one of the things I think that's interesting about this season for players is, you know, in a normal season, you play a game, whether the emotions run high or not in that game, you guys are usually pretty well capable of parking it and moving on because you got a next opponent the next night or two nights later in a different city, right? I mean, you got to move on fast in the regular season. This season, you'll be playing the same team back to back in the same building, maybe three times in a row or two and three nights or three and five nights, whatever it may be. What's the challenge there? Because it's not necessarily, hey, let's park it and we got a new opponent we got to look at. You'd be looking at the same guys that you just ran with high emotions against. How does that change the mentality of a player?
Well, I think it's, like I said, it's going to be more like playoffs where you're going to have to adjust a lot more. What you're saying, when you play one team one night and then the other the next, it's a bit different. You can sort of stick to the same systems, but when you're playing a team two to three times, like you said, you can adjust to what they're doing a bit more and focus on that team for the week ahead. So I think there's going to be a lot more shifting of systems or power play systems and stuff like that. And I think the teams are going to have to be adjusting well on the fly compared to when you're locked into your system for a month or two or until you start switching. So it's definitely going to be more playoff atmosphere, I think, in those games with system-wise, like I said, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
For a long time now, so many Wild fans have been excited about Kirill Kaprizov coming over. You know, and normally there would be 9 million people at training camp pressed against the glass to see what's happening. And unfortunately, none of that can happen. So I'm going to count on you to be the scout for everybody that's interested. What's he look like in the first week of camp here, and what are your impressions?
He looks great. He's excited to play and to be here. And he works extremely hard and he's not afraid to get into the battles. But I think what impresses me most is his vision. He always seems to know where guys are on the ice, and he's very deceptive of the plays that he's making and just little moves he can make to get shots off. And when he does shoot, he has a very, very hard shot and accurate shot. So far he's looked great, and he's just excited to be here. I think he said the other day that he hasn't played in a good 9 months with his season ending over there. So he just wants to get it going.
Obviously his skill would lead the Wild to have the potential to be a more dynamic team than you guys have been in the past. But then you toss in Kevin Fiala too. We saw what he did, you know, in the second half of last season as well. Is that the expectation? And maybe is that part of the vision that Bill Guerin talks about, just the Wild becoming more of a dynamic team, having different skillful options and, you know, to be able to play those types of games too?
Yeah, I think so. And with Dean as well coming in, he's implementing a new system where there's more freedom and a bit faster pace system than we've played in the past, where he's giving guys the freedom to use their skill and execute. But at the same time, if you need to dump a puck in, he expects you to do that as well. But I think we have a lot of options this year, with whether it's power play or 4-on-4 with guys, like you said, that have more skill than we've had in the past. And so with some younger guys coming in with some more speed. So we're looking forward to that.
What specifically are you most looking forward to? You know, you talked about Kirill, and it's been 9 months since he played hockey. It's been a while since you've played as well, not as long. But as you go into the season, and there's so many things that we don't know, but I'm curious as a player, what's the one thing you're most looking forward to?
Just getting back on the ice in a game situation. I feel like we've been practicing for forever right now, and it'll be nice to see a different opponent's face and a guy on your team. So to finally be able to get out there and play some meaningful games, and just even traveling, getting into routine is what we're used to and what we're looking forward to the most.
Well, Jared, man, we really appreciate a couple of minutes. Can't wait to see you back on the ice in, like you said, a meaningful game where you're playing somebody else, not your teammates. It's coming up soon. Thanks for joining us, all right?
Thanks for having me, guys.
Good to catch up there with the Minnesota Wild captain, Jared Spurgeon. Looking forward to seeing him on the ice, Sean. before we go, one thing that we always do at NHL.com, and we do it throughout the season too, and each quarter of the season we do it. It's going to come faster this year. There's no question about it. Is a trophy tracker where we look at, you know, who's in the lead for some of the bigger trophies in the league. We typically do the Hart Trophy, the Calder Trophy, Norris, Vezina, and the Jack Adams. So it's preseason. We're less than a week away from the start of the regular season. Let's do our trophy trackers right now. You ready?
Ready.
Ready. All right. Let's start with the Jack Adams, which I think is the hardest one, by the way, to predict at this point. But I'll give you mine first. I had Jared Bednar from the Colorado Avalanche, just edging out Peter Laviolette from the Washington Capitals.
So this one on NHL.com runs on Saturday. It's the first one. We have 19 people that vote. So I was telling you about math and how it's a really sore subject for me. When you have 19 people vote, picking five places each, those are some pretty big numbers. So it took me forever to figure this one out. But one of the reasons it took me forever is because there were 22 coaches picked.
Wow.
Out of the 31 coaches, at least 22 of them got at least one vote, right? And that's crazy because it's always a bigger number when the season starts. But I think it says a lot about, you know, what you think the league's going to look like this year, who's going to contend, because that's what this generally reflects, right, is who's going to have the best year. So 22 coaches got at least one vote. My top guy was Travis Green in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
right? I think they're going to have a really good year. I think he's been building towards this for a while. And, you know, pretty much for our staff, people either picked him to win it or not to be involved at all. I think he got like 7 first place votes, a couple of third place votes, and then nothing. So he was kind of a polarizing candidate. And then, you know, the other guy that I had was Bednar, just because I think Colorado's so good.
Yeah.
And at some point he has to get credit for what's been built there.
Yeah. And that's why I had him, because a lot of times this award goes to the guy who built the team up that wasn't supposed to be very good. I think they match their expectations this season, the Avalanche. So he was my guy. Let's look at the Rookie of the Year, the Calder Trophy. Tough one. We talked about a bunch of the guys who could be, you know, in the running for this already, when we mentioned Kaprizov and Stutzel and Byfield and Lafreniere. But to me, it's Shesterkin. It's Igor Shesterkin. He's going to get some games with the Rangers. He's going to put up some good numbers with the Rangers this season, whether they get in or not. And I don't think they're a playoff team right now. I think Shesterkin's the guy.
I don't. And I was one of maybe 3 that didn't even have him on a ballot when it came to my Calder. I'm not a huge goalie guy, you know, when it comes to rookies, just because A, they don't usually see enough games, and Shesterkin may be different, but I think that transition's really hard. And so he's not on my preseason one. Who knows, maybe a quarter of the season goes through and I pick him as first place and try and pretend I never didn't have him on my ballot. But I don't, you know, and we talked about Tim Stutzel and I raved about him. And so, you know, he's the number one guy on my ballot. And then, you know, the second guy I have is Romanov, and we talked to Claude Julien about this, and they've raved about him. And, you know, we've seen for years now the defensemen that come in and just dominate, right? It used to never happen, and now it does all the time. McCarr and Hughes last year, you know, are prime examples. I think Romanov has that kind of year with the Canadiens, so he's my number two guy.
Yeah, I just wonder if he's going to put up enough numbers to get that level of notoriety. But anyway, the beauty of this, John, is you can't be wrong right now. Norris Trophy, you mentioned McCarr, he won the Calder. I think he wins the Norris this year.
It's going to be a big jump, right? Because he's still so young, and I think it takes a couple of years for the voters to catch up, but they're so good, and I think he's going to be really good. I think Devin Toews is going to help him out and then kind of spread things around. Their defense is excellent. So, you know, I don't know that I would bet against him per se. Again, the thing that worries me the most is just catching up all the voters. You know, I think if I had to pick right now, I think I would go with John Carlson, right? If the Capitals are going to be good, he's going to have to be really good. So that's where my pick would go.
Yeah, you're going to get the numbers from Carlson. There's no question about it. But I think you get the numbers. And in my opinion, just a better overall defensive two-way type of game from Cale Makar. So, by the way, number two for me was Victor Hedman in that, and number three was Miro Heiskanen. I was sold on Heiskanen after what I saw in the playoffs last season. So, again, We're just throwing these out there. You know, maybe one of us will hit on one of these and you know, we'll brag about it later on. Last two, Vezina Trophy and then Hart. We'll go Vezina first. I went Carey Price.
This could be the year, like, because he's going to get rest. But I think a lot of people will look at the fewer starts and maybe be like, he's not as important anymore. You know, Jake Allen's playing more games. But I think his numbers are certainly going to be better. To me, this was partially my pick. Like, here's the funny thing when we do these, you know, I always wrestle with, are we picking who's going to win or are we picking who we think should win, right? Because right. Sometimes I think they're two different things. And this is a case where I think they're two different things, maybe. And because I picked Lehner first. And I think he's going to be really good, but I think that the voting public and again, I think these are narratives that kind of build up. Right. He's had two really good years and he's been in the spotlight. And I think if he puts another good year together, he's going to garner a lot of votes. I think that he beats Hellebuck. And we talked a little bit with Brian Boucher at the beginning and kind of leading into one of my questions. You know, Connor Hellebuck was like, I want to play and I want to play all the time. And, you know, I'm pretty much the reason if we're going to go far, it's going to be because of me. And Paul Maurice joked and said, oh, I'm surprised. You know, because Connor said he wanted to play 80% of the games and Paul was like, oh, he's lowered his demands kind of as a joke. But I think it's that mentality that just drives him and makes him so good. So it's really hard to repeat, but he may have a chance to do it.
All right. All right. And last one before we get out of here, let's do it quick. The Hart Trophy, the big one, the MVP of the league to me is Nathan MacKinnon. And that would give me MacKinnon, Makar and Bednar. It tells you what I think about the Colorado Avalanche, right?
So I think you think the Avalanche are going to be good.
Yes.
I also think the Avalanche are going to be good. I don't know if they're Stanley Cup good for a lot of the reasons we talked about throughout this podcast and basically, you know, the depth of their goaltending and what they do with that. But I think they're going to be regular season really good, really, really good. I think a lot of teams are going to come in and have trouble dealing with them, you know, especially on a short rest or whatever else it might be. They're fast, that they can play physical. Their ability to break out of their end is first rate with the defensemen they have. And, you know, Bush said it and we kind of just let it go and nobody questioned it. And to me, that was very telling. Nathan MacKinnon's the best player in the league right now.
Yeah, I agree.
And I don't know that you can argue with that. You know, maybe you want to put McDavid in there and maybe there's some stalwarts that are still like, hey, what about Sid? And I would listen to those arguments. But when you watch Nathan MacKinnon, like you watched him in the playoffs and you've watched him over the last couple of years, there's nobody in the league that can do all the things he can do. So this is a rare occasion, Dan, where we agree and we can't even fight.
Yeah. And that's a perfect way to end the podcast, in my opinion. You know, we go out on an agreement. We're all rejoicing now, right, Sean?
Exactly.
Yes.
What's the matter with peace, love, and understanding? As
there you go.
Costello once said.
There you go. Well, we thank Brian Boucher. We thank Jared Spurgeon. NHL hockey's coming at you soon. And until then, everybody stay safe out there.